Okay, tonight is Wednesday night, February 15th, or 20th day of the month of Shvat. This is the women's Mishnah or Gemara share. We are in the middle of first parak of Maseches Chulin.
Okay, Rabotai. We are in the midst of a very complicated sugya concerning how we approach elements of doubt that have been created. Do we rely on Rov, Chazaka? I promise you it's coming to an end shortly, and we'll move on to something a little easier. And especially, as I said, if we'll switch to the eighth parak, which will be all of the laws of Kashrut, it might be a little more, you know, meaningful. But this is a very interesting and conceptually challenging Gemara. So the last 2 weeks, we focused on the debate between Rav Huna and Rav Chisda about an animal that was slaughtered, and the Shochet didn't check whether or not he severed the animal properly. Did he do 50%? Were there any trefot? So we went through the whole sugya. Tonight we're going to see a spin-off of it, and the Gemara, between the Gemara and Tosfot, there will be three or even four different types of cases, all related to one another, and all dealing with the principle of how do we resolve an element of doubt. So we're going to be starting with page number 2, not page number 1. So that's the way I am. No other reason. Just to get you crazy. Why we're starting page number 2. It's bracketed about a third of the way down. Itmar. We have learned. Here is the case. Somebody, the Shochet, did what he was supposed to do prior to the Shechita, and he examined the knife, and it was perfectly smooth. Perfectly smooth. As I told you many times, the way a Shochet checks it is on his nail and on his tongue. Something very hard, such as a nail, and then he will feel if there are any nicks or ridges in the knife, and something very smooth, like the tongue, which can detect if there is something there. That's why I told you, Shochtim don't talk. They only shecht. So here, this Shochet checked the knife before, and it was perfectly okay. Now he slaughters the animal, and right after the Shechita, he noticed that the knife was damaged, had a nick in it. Hashochet itmar, hashochet besakin, somebody slaughtered with a knife that was perfectly checked. Vinimtseit piguma, now it's pagum, a damaged knife. Now, without looking at the Gemara, we're going to develop what might be the issue. First of all, if you slaughter with a damaged knife that has a nick, the Shechita is not good, because perhaps when you applied the knife to the trachea or the esophagus, it got caught on that little ridge and you ripped it as opposed to cutting it. And if you knew for a fact that you had a nick in advance, and you used such a knife, every Tom, Dick, Harry, and Sam would say that the shechita, that the animal's a nevela. It's nevela. The shechita was definitely not good, rendering the animal a nevela, an animal that died from a non-kosher shechita. The issue here is, he checked the knife and it was perfect. After the shechita, lo and behold, he now, what happened? He checked it and it wasn't good.
Is it possible that that happens in the act of shechita?
Ooh! The question is, when in the act of shechita did it happen?
before the animal.
So give me two possibilities. One which will indicate to you why it's the shechita is no good, and one which will indicate to you why the shechita is good. So give me two possibilities.
Okay, so if
we'll start with one.
Okay, if the nip happened during the first 50.1% of the neck, then that's a problem.
Good. So what is the first thing that an animal, that the knife comes in contact with? The skin. Good. So one Amoraic sage will say that we always have to run to the possibility that the knife got nicked when it touches the skin, and by the time it, what happened? It reached the trachea and the esophagus, it was already nicked. Hence, the animal's an avela.
But skin is soft.
Oh! That's what the other opinion says. Skin rarely causes a nick. What in the animal would typically lead to a nick?
A bone.
Good. But there are no bones before you finish slaughtering. If you put the knife to the neck, it will not come in contact with a bone until after the shechita has been done.
So then it's kosher.
Then it's kosher.
Does that mean when does it come into the contact with the bone?
After it goes to the back of the neck. The back of the neck. There's a bone back there, supposedly.
The vertebrae.
Good. Excellent. We got a doctor here to tell us. It's the vertebrae. Good. But that's in the back. Good.
What?
Yeah, but that's we don't have bones stuck in our throat.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Is shechita like? Isn't it the death of the animal is from the blood vessels being severed, not from the trachea, or is
no.
it from the trachea? From
the trachea.
Okay.
And the esophagus.
You know, the carotid is there. So if you just go like that, even if you didn't hit the trachea, they would probably die.
No, but it's not going to die quickly. It's a 1 second thing.
Okay, I didn't know.
Yes. Yes. So now let's read the Gemara. You already identify the Gemara. You're a genius. You identify what the Gemara is going to say.
Do so we have to check, therefore, after we're done? Do we have to check the knife to see if there was a nick?
He happened to have checked the knife.
No, I'm saying, but if you
don't have to.
We should avoid it. We should not.
No, but why did he shaft? I told you he was at Empire Chickens. And what did they do? The chickens are coming on an assembly line. So before he shechted the next one, he wanted to check his knife, as he is required to do.
Each one is required to check?
That is correct. That's why I told you there are three guys on the assembly line. One guy shechts and hands his knife to someone else who just checks. Then the third guy shechts animal chicken number two. That's correct.
But the trachea is cartilage, and that's also hard, so that could also damage the knife.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cartilage can damage the knife?
Yeah?
Yeah,
it's hard. It's not as hard as bone, but
okay. Let's see what the Gemara says now. Let's read it inside. Itmar hashochet besakin v'nimseis peguma. Amar Rav Huna. Listen to what Rav Huna said. Afilu shiber ba atzamot kol hayom. Even if after the shechita, you know what he knew, used his shechita knife for? Chopping up bones. That's all he did, was chop up bones. And then he noticed the nick on the knife. Psula, the shechita is disqualified. Chayshinan shema be'or nifgima. Perhaps it already had the nick the first time it came in contact with the skin. That's Rav Huna's concern. The Rav Chisda Omar, and Rav Chisda, who often argues with Rav Huna, kshera, that the animal is kosher. Why? Shema be'etzem nifgema. It's an unusual expression, not shema, because later the Gemara is going to say, it's most probable that what caused the nick to come about in this knife, what probably? It was a bone, something very hard. So, therefore it is kosher. So now the Gemara is now going to attack Rav Chisda for a second. So now, I ask you to recall the principle of the Gemara a page earlier, which we spent 2 weeks learning. What principle did the Gemara establish if you wind up with a shechita that may have been problematic? How did we resolve the issue last time when the shochet slaughtered and he didn't check whether he slaughtered it properly? So what? There was a debate.
That usually it comes out okay, so therefore it's okay.
No, the Gemara quoted not a rogue. What did the Gemara quote? The chazaka. What chazaka did the Gemara quote? The prior status. What status did this animal have before you started the shechita? It is prohibited. It's either it's because of it's alive, Avram and Achai, or because it's a no zivucha, it's not slaughtered. Before it was slaughtered, it wasn't slaughtered. So his point was that when an animal is alive, the burden of proof upon you is to make sure that it was a good shechita. Prove it to me that it was a good shechita. If you can't prove it to me that it was a good shechita, what happens under those circumstances? It's no good. That's what Rav Huna said.
But not
Neveil. That was the debate, whether it was a Neveil or Trefa. But it's certainly not allowed to eat it. Yeah. Not allowed to eat it. So now the Gemara is going to say, in light of what we learned last daf, last week, whose opinion will this challenge? Rav Huna or Rav Chista? That golden rule, that an animal, when it is slaughtered, if I can't definitively prove that it was slaughtered properly, what status does the animal have and what decision must I make concerning the animal and its shechita? What? That it's no good. Why? Because its prior state was that of something prohibited. Therefore, the Gemara is going to challenge Rav Chista. How can you, Rav Chista, claim? How can you, Rav Chista, claim that you're allowed to eat this animal because you think it probably got damaged by a bone? You have no proof to that fact. So if you have no proof to that fact, I have to entertain the possibility, as your friend Huna did, that it was nicked by the skin. So by the time it reached the trachea and the esophagus, it was already a damaged knife. Since I don't know the answer, how do I resolve the question? You establish it on what? Its prior status. What was the animal's prior status before my question? You're not allowed to eat it. Not allowed to eat it. So how can you, Rav Chista, say this? That's Rav the Gemara's question. Bishlama Rav Huna Kishmate. I understand Rav Huna's opinion because he agrees with our Gemara. Our Gemara, which we learned last week. Elo Rav Chista, my ta'ama. What could possibly be the logic of Rav Chista who said you're allowed to eat this animal? Yes.
Is it possible to do a chazaka not on the cow but on the neck?
Ooh, that's going to be the Gemara's ultimate differentiating remark. Excellent. But where do we have to put it in the meantime? In your pocket. Because the Gemara's not up to it yet. The Gemara's going to suggest something else, but ultimately it's going to cave in exactly what you said. I always told you have an excellent Gemara head. Excellent. You should go back to school. Go to GPATS. That's all. Omar Lecha says Rav Chista. He's going to respond. He's going to defend himself. Omar Lecha. Etzem vadai pogein. Bones definitely can what? Chip away at a knife.
Why can't you look at it?
Hold on, let me just read it. Or suffek pogein, suffek lo pogein. Skin has a small chance of what? Of damaging the knife. but unlikely, because most of the time a skin does what? Doesn't cause a knife to get damaged.
No resistance.
Very low resistance. The heve. So now what do I have here? Heve safek uvadai. The ain safek motzi midevadai. A safek can never override something that is what? That is a vadai. A vadai. So if I had to make a decision, and I do have to make that decision, what in all probability caused this knife to be damaged? I have to assume that it's a bone. Because bones quite frequently cause a knife to get damaged. A skin rarely does so. So the Gemara uses the expression ein safek motzi midei vadai. A potential resolution can't override a vadai resolution. This is a code word for another halacha that you know of. It's called roiv. If I were to take a knife and run it against a piece of skin, 5,000 out of 5,000 in one time, it will not become damaged. If I take a knife and chop bones with it, there's a pretty good chance that it's going to become nicked and damaged. Therefore, says Rav Chisda, yes, I acknowledge to you, my good friend Rav Huna, that there is a prior status of prohibition, which we call chazaka. Chazaka, its prior status. But what do I have on my side? Rov. And whenever there is a conflict between rov and what? And chazaka, I believe rov triumphs. I believe rov triumphs. When do I rely on chazaka? When I have no other way of resolving my dilemma. But here, I have another way of resolving dilemma. I simply operate on a statistical majority. I don't have every knife in the world that I cut and I say, yeah, did it get next again? It's a statistical majority. Most people will tell you that there is a far greater chance that it got damaged by cutting in contact with a bone than it did by getting in contact with the skin. So the vadai, the Gemara says it's almost not just a majority, but it's almost what? A vadai, it's almost a certainty. It's almost a certainty. And therefore, I'm right. You're allowed to eat this animal. You're allowed to eat this animal. That's correct. That's what he says. Yes?
Wouldn't it be logical to check where the damage, like where the tear on the skin, if it's on the skin or if it's further deeper?
There has to be a tear on the skin. Because that's the only way to get inside.
But if the knife doesn't have any ring to it, any neck to it, and it should cut cleanly. It should be a clean cut.
No,
it won't be any tearing.
But you can't tell that, because maybe the part which you use to what? To cut the skin was the undamaged part of the knife. Mm-hmm. By the time you got to the trachea and the esophagus, you used the nicked part of the knife. You can't prove it. Can't. So everybody have it? Clar? That's what the Gemara is saying up until now. Rav Chisda believes that Rov is more powerful than Chazaka. Rov is more powerful than Chazaka. And I'll give you another illustration. I should have photostated for you, but it's a bizarre Gemara in Maseches Chulin. Esebes Pesachim. It's a bizarre case. Very bizarre case. Yeah. The Gemara tells us that in ancient times, premature babies were buried in the ground of a person's house. In Talmudic times, this was a known factor. A known factor. Good. Okay? Now I ask you the question. You have a Kohen who's coming to visit. Is the Kohen allowed to walk into your house? Is a Kohen allowed to walk into your house? What's the answer? Yes or no, and of course, and why? Tell me why you think a Kohen is or not allowed to enter this house.
Depends on the status of a premature baby.
Good. Okay. We don't know yet. We have no idea. So now, if you are a Kohen, and you always have to be careful that I'm not coming in contact with the deceased. So if the baby died when it was 8 months old, it was enough to be metame. That's considered, you know, almost a human being. If the baby was 3 months old, that's not going to be metame. We don't know. We don't know how many people lived in this house before you did. So what will you tell a Kohen about living in this neighborhood if that's the practice in this community? You can't live here, buddy, unless you build a house from scratch. Even that might not help. Why? Because maybe on the back. Exactly. So what would you have to do? Dig up the whole backyard and then build your house here. Dig up the whole backyard. Then you know it's free. Good. That's the Gemara's initial approach. Says the Gemara. If there are mice in the neighborhood, the Kohen can walk in. Why? Because mice eat premature babies in the ground. Yeah, the Gemara spends a lot of time talking about that. It's not the most pleasant thing to talk about, but the mice do. And in fact, not only does a mouse eat it, says the Gemara, he leaves over not one drop. As opposed to, this is a Gemara Psachim, as opposed to chametz. If I had chametz in my house and a mouse came in, he's probably going to eat most of it. But what's going to happen? There might be a crumb or two, and as a result, I have to check the house again if there's any chametz. But for meat, I don't have to check it all, because he leaves not a drop over. Not a drop. Okay? So, what's happening in that Gemara? Listen carefully. Listen carefully. I have to assume that perhaps what is buried here, a premature baby. Says the Gemara, I'm going to tell you a case where I know for a fact, not possibly, I saw the premature baby dead. I saw it in the mouse's mouth. I was walking around in my house. And nonetheless, the Gemara says, a Kohen can come in afterwards. Why? Because Mousie always eats every piece of meat. Never leaves over a drop. Everything. Bones are not necessarily metame.
Well, what about the dog?
Just one second. Now, tell me, what status did this house have when you saw the mouse with a dead baby in it? What status did the house have? It was tummy. I know. It was tummy. And a Kohen can't walk in. So why am I allowing a Kohen here when there is a possibility that part of that deceased baby is still floating around? Answers the Gemara. Because 99% of all mice, make it 100% of mice, leave over nothing.
So that's the rove.
That's the rove, exactly. We didn't check every mouse in the world. It's the statistical majority that's what mice do. So the rove overrides its prior status. It definitely was tame. Because I saw the mouse with the little baby in its mouth, the dead baby. But you're allowed to bring a Kohen in because the Rove overrides the Chazakah. So we won't talk about that case any longer. I'm just going to cut. Cut. Yes.
Another question about the case. The assumption was it's not Rove of the houses that do not have premature babies buried there?
The majority of houses have babies buried there. And you cannot have a Kohen. But if a mice comes around, you can eat. Because the mice is going to dig it up and is going to eat every last drop.
Why would they bury...
I don't know.
Remember, their babies were dying so frequently.
That's correct. That's correct. Cemeteries, not every cemetery has a place for premature babies who've died. Not every cemetery has. And I know a lot of people who've unfortunately had, who had a premature child, and the halacha may not have even been, I don't want to say it, that it was so early, like before 6 months, that technically you don't have to bury the child. You can, I don't want to say the word, you can discard it. But the family didn't feel comfortable doing that. Not every cemetery is going to allow you to bury that person there, because it's, I'm just telling you, it's a fact. But some cemeteries are. There's one cemetery, particularly in Staten Island, that has a special section for premature babies who have passed away and allows the family to take a little coffin like this and bury the child. So,
couldn't they put the premature baby in a certain container that the mouse couldn't get to?
No, apparently they couldn't. They couldn't. Now, good. Good. Now let's continue the next case. Let's continue the next case. Okay, let's move on to something a little more pleasant. So I'm up to the words Masiv Rava L'siyue L'Rav Huna. Rava is now going to ask a question to support Rav Huna. Again, Rav Huna is the one who said you're not allowed to eat this animal because I have to entertain the possibility that the skin already damaged the knife. So Rava is going to ask a question and in support of Rav Huna, and obviously challenging Rav Chista. Taval v'ola. Somebody went to the mikveh, came out of the mikveh, v'nimtza olav davar chotzeitz, and he found on his body something that constitutes a chatzitza. Now, what's the question that's going to run through Rava's mind?
When did the
chatzitza develop? If the chatzitza developed before he immersed or she immersed, what happens? Then it's not kosher. Correct. If it happened afterwards, then it's okay. What's the problem? So Rava cites a braita which says that if someone immerses and later on after immersion, the person who finds something on them which halachically would constitute a chatzitza, says the Gemara, af al pi shenit asek be'oto hamin kol hayom kulo lo alta lo tevila Achiyomar Bori Li Shelohaya Alai Kodom Lachain. Again, what does the Gemara say? Even if you were handling that item all day after the tefillah, all day. So let's talk about something, okay? Let's say paint. Somebody's a painter. The guy goes to the mikveh. He comes out, he paints a whole house, and then he realizes, oh my God, I have some paint on my hand. When did this paint come onto my hand? Before I went to the mikveh or after? Says the Gemara. Even if he what? Was painting a house all day after he came out of the mikveh. So in all probability, when did the paint get on him?
Yeah.
After the mikveh. Says the Gemara, too bad. Unless the person can say definitively, I know for a fact there was not a drop on me before the tefillah, we have to assume that perhaps it was on him before the tefillah. And what does the person have to do? Has to go back to the mikveh a second time. A second time. I get this question all the time from Shoshana. Somebody was in the mikveh, and then they come home. Oh my God, I saw something on it. When did it happen? I get this all the time. So, if the Gemara rules that she has to go, he or she has to go back to the mikveh, so what do we see? Is rove or probability enough to override the prior status? No. What was this person's prior status before he went to the mikveh? Tamei. So the Gemara assumes you cannot remove the prior status of Tumah until you are guaranteed that the tefillah was a good one. Whose opinion does that seem to support? Whose opinion does that seem to support? Rav Huna against Rav Chista. That's Rava's question.
Which would be the same as a night, but you would think so. If you come out of the mikveh, you should check again.
Okay, but they didn't. Normally, you don't have to check again if you check beforehand. So if you check beforehand, that means it was guaranteed. He didn't check. He just jumped into the mikveh. That was it.
Yeah, but they wrote a check at the mikveh. And then I go to the mikveh. Then I come home and I notice a little pen on my hand.
Right.
I've written since then. So I don't know when that pen goes on my hand. Was it because I wrote the check or did it happen because I got home?
Okay, so that would be a similar question. Yes.
In this situation, did the person check before going into the
Absolutely room? Not.
So
that's the issue. If the person did check, then that's what the Gemara says. Then of course he's tahor.
Right.
Of course. The problem is he didn't check. When did he notice it?
After he immersed.
Yeah. Just as an aside, it's an important thing to know. Chatzitza does not mean there is something on one's body that is not natural skin or flesh. Does not mean that. It means there is something on you that you would object to having seen in public on you. So now, this question happens rather regularly. A woman came to the mikveh and she forgot to take off her nail polish. And the mikveh attendant didn't notice it, whatever it was. After she gets out, she's home already. Oh my God, I forgot to take off the nail polish. I will tell her she doesn't have to go to the mikveh again. Because it's not a chatzitza. Midda oraisa. Why is it not a chatzitza? Because women love having nail polish on their fingers. Yes, it's not. It's a foreign substance, but midda oraisa, it's not called a chatzitza. A chatzitza is something that you don't want to have. So a painter, he's not interested in having a paint piece of, you know, a little thing on his hands and his face. He's not interested in that. But nail polish, or those elongated nails, what do you call them? What do you call those? The fake nails, the attached nails. So, l'chatchila, we tell everybody to take them off. But if somebody didn't, not going to make them go back to the mikveh. But by policy, as in terms of public policy, the policy is you got to take them off. But if you didn't, it's not a chatzitza, because that's exactly why you put them on. You want to be seen with them.
So does that go for contact lenses? If you buy a mistake or tova with your contact
lenses? Yes, 100%. Yes. If you're right there in the mikveh, maybe the mikveh attendant will say you to go again. Yeah. But if you went home already and they call me, I would say you don't have to bother. Yeah. So this question is now an attack against Rav Chista. So So the Gemara formulates the question. V'ha-ha-cha, divadai toval. He definitely immersed. Safek heve Allah. There is an element of doubt. Did he have the paint marks before? Safek lo heve Allah. Maybe the paint marks were not on when he entered the mikveh. Uka'asi safek umotzi midevadai. And what happens? The safek comes and what? Uproots the vadai. So, that supports Rav Huna in the same thing. Answers the Gemara. And you're going to jump all over the Gemara's answer and you're going to get the Gemara's next question. I know you will. I'm counting on you. Answers the Gemara. Sha'ani hasam. There, by immersion, it's different. The ikol lemeimar ha'amed tome al cheskaso ve'ema lo tovav. Since what was the prior status of this person before the guy went to the mikveh? He's tome. I just don't know whether the tevila was good or not. So in the absence of knowing definitively, what do we say? Let's rely on the previous chazaka. The previous chazaka is that what? That he's tame. So that's why we're going to rule that he's tame. But the animal, that case is not analogous. And Rav Chisda says, by the animal, I think you can eat the animal. Because it's not analogous to the tefillah case. By the tefillah case, the person has a cheskas tum'ah. So I'm waiting for the next question. Well, the animal also has a cheskas isur. Because before you shechted it, it was prohibited. So what are you asking? What kind of answer is this? That's the Gemara's next question. And it's going to come to what you said. Hold on a second. Ask the Gemara, Hachanami, here too, Ha'amed Beheima al Chezkata, Ve'emar lo nishchata. Let us suggest that what? That we don't know. So if we don't know if the knife was damaged by skin or bone, let's resolve the dilemma by saying we will continue its prior status. Its prior status was prohibited. Why do you, Rav Chisda, say you're allowed to eat it? Answers the Gemara, what do you mean? Its prior status is prohibited. Hare shchuta lefanecha. The animal has been slaughtered. Doesn't it look like it's been slaughtered? The esophagus and the trachea are cut. You're right, we don't know whether it was cut or ripped, but it's right here. So the fact that the animal is currently in a state of shchuta should negate what previous chazaka? That it was usur, the animal was usur. So what do you think the Gemara is going to ask about the person? About the person who went to the mikveh. What do you think the next question is going to be? Exactly! What do you mean? He went to the mikveh.
Right.
Asks the Gemara, Hachanami, Hare Toval Lifanecha. Hare Toval Lifanecha. He went to the mikveh. So if he went to the mikveh, we should say that overrides the possibility that what? That the paint was on his body before he went to the mikveh?
I don't understand.
Because
in both cases, it doesn't really matter that they were there.
Sure it does.
We still don't know whether it's an Adela or a kosher shlita.
Correct.
We don't know with the person whether he was
so good. Well, the Gemara is trying to defend Rav Chisda. And the Gemara is suggesting that I can defend Rav Chisda based on the fact that the animal right now is not alive, it's dead. And if I look at the animal, how does it look like it died? Through a kosher shechita. Because there is nothing in the veshet and the kaneh that seems to betray the fact that what? That it was slaughtered properly. Therefore, I think there is a difference, says Rav Chisda, between my case and the Tefillah case. Asks the Gemara, well, if you're playing that game, I'll say the same thing. The person definitely went to the mikveh. So once he definitely went to the mikveh, what status does a person enjoy after a person goes to the mikveh? He's tahor. So that status change should override his previous what? His previous status of being tameh. And as a result, when should we assume the paint came on him? After he immersed. Why is there a distinction between the mikveh case and the animal case, I ask you, Rav Chisda? Answers the Gemara. One more step, and then you're awake. Answers the Gemara. Ha is yalid be'reusa. Ha, by the mikveh case, something happened which questions the validity of the tefillah. What happened that questioned the validity of the tefillah? He found paint on him. Therefore, what can we not assume is his current state? He's not tahor. Why? Because the fact that he's got paint on him indicates it might have been on before. So what's the Gemara's next question? Well, the knife is also damaged. The knife is damaged. So once the knife is damaged, that's areyusa, something that is telling us that your statement, hare shchuta lefonecha, hey buddy, it was slaughtered properly. Maybe it wasn't slaughtered properly, because I see for a fact that the knife has been nicked. So what must I assume? That when was it nicked? Before it reached the Veshet and the Kana. I still don't see any difference between the two cases. Yes?
It seems to me that what would make it analogous is if that somebody would find that there's a problem in the mikvah.
That's Toysus' case. Legis Arani Keshela, I'm getting to that next. Excellent. Toysus will talk about that. And he'll come up with a very sophisticated distinction. Answers the Gemara, Naomi's answer. Sakin it ra'oi, behema lo it ra'oi. Where was the defect in this case? In the knife. Was there any defect in the animal?
No.
So when I look at the animal, what information is communicated to me by looking at this animal? What information is communicated to me? It looked like a perfect good shechita.
We have the case.
Where is the issue?
The knife.
That's external to the animal.
We have the case.
Joe, excuse me one second. Therefore, I have a right to assume, says Rav Chisda, I have a right to assume that since I look at this animal and it looks like a perfect shechita had taken place, I have a right to assume that this animal, this knife, was nicked after the shechita took place. However, by the mikveh case, I, Rav Chisda, admit that he is tamei. Because where is the defect found?
On
the person who we are asking, are you tamei or tahor? He's got paint on him. We're not asking about the status of the knife, we're asking about the status of the animal. Therefore, Rav Chisda says, I can maintain my opinion that the animal is kosher despite the fact that I found a possible reason that it should not be because the knife is damaged. Whereas by mikvah, I will say, I'll admit to you, Rav Huna, as the bright, I have to, it's a brighter. I'll admit to you that the person remains tameh. Because the person, because the item, in this case the person, upon whom the question is centered, are you tameh or tahor? That person has the defect on him or her. They've got the paint on their body. Whereas by the animal, the defect is external to the animal. It's on the knife. Yes, Shari.
Didn't we have the case one of the first times we touched the topic where when somebody else is doing it, that's, you know, who we don't necessarily trust, we automatically just look at it. If somebody has to check. Somebody has to check it after.
Because there is nobody there who has the status that he would check it properly. So once the person... Right. No, the Gemara said you have to check the knife, you got to do a lot. Depends who it is, a kuti or something like that. But the problem there was, you can't operate on the assumption that the shechita was done properly. Because whatever it is, he doesn't believe in this halacha, doesn't believe in that halacha. Here, we believe that the person who shechted it properly. Because he was a good shochet.
The external is not the person doing the shechita.
Correct. Or, it's not the animal, it's the knife. Therefore, Rav Chisda says, I think there's a fundamental difference between the two cases.
So would the parallel be if after I went to the mikvah, we discovered there was a problem in the mikvah itself, but the mikvah...
That's what Yocheved just asked.
You know, okay,
and I said, we're going to look at Tosfos now. Tosfos raises...
Why did they say they should have brought that as example?
With what?
The mikvah being found defective.
Yes. Oh, wow. Listen to what Tosfos says. It has less than the requisite amount of water because there is a leak that you don't detect. So let's look at Tosfos. I bracketed Tosfos. Sakin itra'oi. The knife, sakin, the knife was defective. Behema lo itra'oi. Says Tosfos. Tamar. Es is bamira wunder. Deleka lishanuye hachi. You can't give the same answer. Ahi the mikveh shenim dad v'nim tzachaser. A mikveh was measured. It has to have what's called 40 sa'a of water, of rainwater. 24.75 cubic feet of water. That's then after that you can add tap water. That's what we always do because you can barely immerse oneself in 24.75 cubic feet of water. It's very small. So after the kashrut of the mikveh has been established, we turn on the tap and then we operate with the principle of bitul. Every drop that comes in is batel to the kosher water. And not only does it batel, it becomes part of the kosher water. So it keeps being mevatel all the other subsequent waters that come in. That's how every mikveh is made. In our holy city of Teaneck, we take into consideration the Ravid's opinion, who says that of course this is true. But if ultimately there is more than 24.75 cubic feet of tap water, I don't allow this system to work. I don't allow it to work.
It can't be more.
It can't be more than the original. The halach is against the Ravid. You can have 5,000 gallons of water once the 24.75 is in the pit. You can put 5,000 gallons of water from the tap and it's all kosher. That's the halacha. But here, we wanted to be machmir because to make people happy, okay, at some cost, I must say. And the way they resolve it is by a process called hashaka. Hashaka means nishika, to kiss. What you do is you make a second bore with exactly 24.75 cubic feet of rainwater and you make a hole in that bore and you make a hole in the other bore and then there's a plug in it, but when you want to do it, you take out the plug and the two waters of the are kissing each other. That's called hashaka. And there is a halachic principle that if you have hashaka, that kashers everything in the other mikveh. That's a halacha. So, but you have to build a second pit for that, and it costs more money. And I'm telling you that when they built the Teaneck Mikveh, they spent a little more money. I don't know why. I don't remember why, but they did.
To make everybody happy.
In order, what?
To make everybody happy.
Okay, fine. I am quite certain that the overwhelming majority of people in Teaneck have no clue why they had to put such a bar in. No, John. Maybe a rabbi or two may have been aware of it and made that recommendation. I have no idea why the Mikveh committee approved it. What? I'm not sure how Lubavitch does their Mikveh. I don't know. I don't know. So anyhow, here is, we're having a regular, no two borot. There's one bor. And it's exactly 40 saw, exactly 24.75, and I measured it. I measured it. Now people went in all day, and now I measured it again, and it had only 23.75 cubic feet of water. So tell me what the issue is. What's the issue? When did it lose the water?
When you stepped out, you could have ruined
it. That's correct. So what are the two possibilities? It could be that it happened the last minute. After the last person. That's when a leak developed. Or possibly what else could have happened? Could happen before anybody walked into the mikveh. 5 minutes after you checked it, the leak developed and it was already below status. So we have no idea. So what does the Gemara tell us? Tosfos quotes it. It's a Gemara Nida. The kol hataharot shena'asu al gabav limafreya kulon timeot. Every person or utensil that was immersed in this mikveh all day since the last time I confirmed that it had the correct amount, they are rendered halachically tamei and must immerse again in a kosher mikveh. So now, Tosfos asks the question. Why is that the case? Why is that the case? Who are we asking the question on? Are you tahor or tamei? The person. That's the question. Am I tamei or am I tahor? Now, did I go to the mikveh? Yeah. So what status should I have? Cheskas tahara. Where is the deficiency? Is the deficiency found on me? No. It's in the mikveh. Well, how come the Gemara doesn't say like our Gemara? That if the deficiency is external to the question mark, you ignore it. Just as the knife is external to the animal, we ignore it. And the only time we don't ignore it is when there is paint on a person. Because the question is not external, it's directly on the person who we have the question. Are you tamei or tahor? That's Tosfos' question. That was your question. Why does the Gemara not say exactly what the Gemara said here? What do you think Tosfos is going to answer? What might be the difference between a knife that was nicked and a mikveh that's missing water? What might be the difference?
You nick the knife. So
what's the difference? Different. So let me hear. What?
Because the whole idea of the mikveh is the running water that's purifying you. I mean, if there's a certain amount of...
But there was. But I discovered there's less than the requisite amount.
The knife wasn't just sitting there and then it got nicked. The mikveh was sitting there and then it became...
You're on to something. Just don't fall off the cliff. You're on to something. What might it be? No, a knife can be fixed also. You go to that truck that comes around in the Bronx, and you have any knives to sharpen? Right? We all remember that truck. Yes?
So the knife, it would happen during the action of the actual shechita. And the mikvah losing water doesn't necessarily happen.
So say it a little sharper.
Yes, that's right.
We said we had a logical reason. It was the bone, which happens after you've done the...
Okay, but there's no guarantee.
No, but we said roof. We said...
But Rav Huna rejected that. He proved that he rejected it from the case of the mikvah. Most people, before they start painting, don't have paint on them. Most people. But the Gemara rejected that. Who cares? You might have had paint on you before you started painting. We don't know. So what's the difference? You're on the right track. The difference is that a nick in a knife happens in an instant. Loss of water in a mikveh due to a leak happens slowly.
We don't know when that was.
Correct. So when I discover, I measure the mikveh 5 hours after 20 people went into the mikveh. You have no right to assume that when did it happen. Oh, right now. Because leaks don't... Most mikvahot, as I just said, had way more than 24.75 cubic feet. So if now it has less, it's been leaking for a while. Hence, we know for a fact that the deficiency, claims Tosfos, did not happen right now. Hence, what do we have to anticipate? That when did it start? Before somebody went into the mikveh. Since I don't know when exactly, which one, I have to rule that everybody's tummy. But by a knife, where it happens in one instant, I have a right to assume that when did it happen? The probability against the bone. And at that time, the shechita had already been completed. Therefore, I, Rav Chisda, say you're allowed to eat the meat. I, Rav Chisda, don't bother me with this case. This case is different. This case is different because it's a constant. It's a slow process. Kacha omrim hatosafot. I'll read it inside. Tosfos's answer. It's where it says v'yesh loimar. 5 lines into the Tosfos. Dishani hasam. There it's different. The ikol lemeimar chaser ve'asoi. It's missing, but it's leaking slowly. It's a continuous process. Continuous process. Therefore, you can't compare a knife. A knife that was nicked is not a continuous process. You cut a bone and it chips the knife. That's it. Once it happened, and that's it. It doesn't happen over 6 hours. Mikveh shenimdad is something that happens slowly. Hence, it is impossible to identify there is one specific time when it happened. Therefore, everybody who went to the mikveh, every utensil that was brought to this mikveh, has to come back and immerse again when the mikveh is filled and measured a second time. Now, you never have to... The mikveh doesn't check the amount of water in the mikveh every day. They hardly ever check it. Tell me why. You know the reason why.
They're not having it exactly
right. But how do I know it's not missing? How do I know? Tell me halachically why I don't have to check. Why everybody, if I didn't check it, it's why is it okay? Because it has a chazakah. I checked it 6 weeks ago, and it was all there. Until I know for a fact that it's missing, or below the level, I have a right to assume that it's retained all of the required water. The problem in this case of Tosfot was, I measured it a second time, and it was missing. No, we don't. No, no.
Not afterwards, but before they start having people enter numbers.
Yeah, they. I don't think they do that. It would not be a terrible idea, but I don't think we do it. Honestly, I don't think they do. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So the answer probably is because the amount of water that we place in a mikveh is so large that evaporation is not going to lead to what? But at that time, they didn't have so much water, and as a result, it was almost pretty much exact, and then that's the problem. In our mikvahot, I don't ever remember a mikveh that was measured and it's missing 20, 40 saw. I never heard of such a thing today, in today's day and age.
Do you want to put in more than the minimum also?
Of course. You can put in as much as you want.
Of
the kosher rainwater?
Of
course you can. What's the downside?
Right.
It's just in certain certain times, it's very hard to get sufficient. Because don't forget, the minute it enters a utensil, it's automatically disqualified. So you know what we do in our mikveh. We don't collect water in a bucket and then put it in rainwater because that would make it disqualified. There are PCV type pipes made out of a strong plastic that are not mekabel tumah. That don't have no possibility of becoming tumah. So it collects the water on the roof. It passes down and goes straight into the bore, into the pit. That was the innovation. In olden days, what they had to do was open up a roof, let the rain come in into the pit itself. That's the only way to do it. It was very, very difficult. There were times when mikvahot in olden that were closed because they didn't get enough rain for a while. There were many times like that. Yeah, during the summer particularly.
There's an article somewhere like in the north where they had to bring the snow on wood and they had to be careful not to touch it.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, you're allowed to use snow to build up the thing, to build up the water, but it can't be mekabel tumah. It has to be transported on something, any metal utensil, no, automatically no good. Wood is not generally mekabel tumah. On plain flat pieces of wood, pshute kliyetz. If it's a utensil, it could be. But plain pieces of wood are not mekabel tumah. That's what they used to do. Plain flat board, have the snow come and bring it in and wait till it melts. And Yeah. You can actually be tovel in snow outside if there is no mikveh available. B'di'evit. You're allowed to. Why would you want to do that? But in certain communities in Russia, people had to do that in Russia. People had to do it. There was no mikveh for 400 miles. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, people in the mountains used to do that. Go into the lake. Before there were mikvahot built in Monticello, and now 50,000, every Chassidish Rebbe in a bungalow colony has his own mikvah. But yeah, no doubt. Yes. All right, we'll stop here. Continue next Devach.